Well, folks, we go from one delicious treat to another. I get to have an amazing follow-up to eating a locust. Did you hear that, Rachel? I just ate a locust.
I did.
Yeah.
How was it?
It was
interesting.
It was a locust in my mouth that I ate, but it was fully dried. You know, so nothing overly gross about it. You know, it was just kind of crunchy.
Okay, it's better than kind of imagining like stuff oozing out of it.
Right, which is that, you know, kind of almost what you're. I was almost ready to do it. You know, but I didn't. Rachel Barilla is here, who's a chef in Boca al Lupo, one of the wonderful restaurants in town here. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, no problem.
It's Foodie Friday.
Foodie Friday.
Foodie Friday. Yeah. We're so excited to have you here because you've got something prepared already right here. It's so delicious. And in fact, if you want to see images of this, it's on ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, and there's a recipe of what Rachel's going to talk about and also images of it. But I wanted to just talk real quickly, first and foremost, about the life of a chef.
Oh, it's not as glamorous as the television makes it believe.
That's what I was going to say, right? Which is that there is this new celebrity around being a chef and...
Yeah.
You know, how countless cooking shows and shows where even kids are the cook, all that stuff.
Yeah. So.
And then I've got an opportunity to actually work with you on a special kind of one of those really fun Saturday dinners.
One of our course dinners, Saturdays.
That you guys did. Yeah. And I sort of hadn't really been behind the scenes since I had been a dishwasher, you know, 30 years ago. And just really realized, wow, these guys work so hard back here. It's really wild.
It's hard work, but... We like it. We like that kind of hard work. It's different than, I guess the reason why we're in food and cooking and like that is because we can't really see ourselves working behind a desk. We always got to keep moving, keep our mind kind of thinking. And just the type of cooking that we do with the ever-changing menu, it keeps us constantly creating.
That's part of what I was going to ask you about. So like your day or your week, it's about... Menu creation.
Yeah. So we have a base menu because
we
want to make sure that people, when they come in, they know that there's like a base menu that is they can go to. And then we also have like weekly specials or maybe like a monthly special just to kind of bring things that are a little more in season, kind of feature that, and then kind of keep us as cooks kind of creatively give us an outlet for that.
I think was a fun element to what you and Bo both bring to that restaurant, which is taking ingredient elements that we might consider maybe more common, right? Like ranch dressing, for instance.
Yeah.
And then doing something really exceptional or very interesting or different with that ingredient.
It's just food is food. You just got to figure out different ways to do it. I mean, there's certain parts of the culinary world where certain ingredients are kind of looked down upon, but it's all relative and all kind of perspective and how you grew up thinking about that food.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. When I was in the restaurant the other night, I was asking you how your holidays were, and you're like, well, you got about 30, 40 people in the house. I was like, and I thought later, I was like, I wonder if that's why is that part of how you got to where cooking for a crowd, cooking for a lot of people, is maybe something that's not unusual for you?
For me, it's actually very, it's like growing up, if a family party doesn't have at least 20 people, it's a small party.
Right.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of people, the difference between cooking at home, private cooking, to being someone who would be a commercial chef, that would be this huge adjustment, you know, because you've only ever cooked for four people. So timing things for four people is a completely different thing than timing things for multiple tables.
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
Right.
Even Bo, he kind of jokes about how I'm so used to making huge portions of everything that he's like, you got to keep them down.
keep them down. Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about this dish that we're looking at here. It smells amazing already.
So this is Arroz Caldo. It's a Filipino rice porridge. It's kind of a subset of a more general general food, which is lugao. It's just rice porridge. But
so to me, it looks like a risotto almost. Is that
But this is the rice is broken down and cooked down a lot farther, so it's more porridgey. So you don't have a lot of like the whole grains of the rice. So this is more of a soup,
okay,
thick soup. And Ars Caldas specifically has some sort of meat and other ingredients kind of put into it to flavor it. A lot of the times it's green onion, scallion. Chicken is the most common meat to be used with it. Eggs, soft egg, or hard-boiled eggs. And then we often top it off with fish sauce. We call it patis.
Okay.
It's used as a condiment and some garlic chips. And we also put calamansi with it. So over here we'd use lime or lemon as a citrus.
I see. I associate Philippine food often with chicken or pork.
Chicken or pork. Those are the most common.
Is there a lot of seafood that happens with Philippine
cooking? Yeah, it's just that it hasn't made it into like mainstream like knowledge in the Western.
Right.
On the West. But in the Philippines, there's so many different types of culinary stuff.
It's a multicultural.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, American as a general American, basic American guy, I think of the Philippines as like the Philippines.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not. It's multiple.
There's
cultures.
Thousand islands.
Right.
But if you could actually tell where someone's food influence has come from, as far as where their family comes from, like the farther north, they have they have a lot of farming, so there's a lot of vegetables, fresh vegetables in their foods. And then you go a little bit south, it's more fish-based. And then a little bit farther south, you got a lot of fermentation and pork. But, yeah, and then in the very, very south, it's more there's a lot of spices from the Indian and Muslim population that had migrated over. So you could tell there's a lot of influences from all the migrants that have eventually settled into the Philippines. I mean, even the Americans have kind of left their during the World War II, there was a scarcity of ketchup. So there was too much bananas, so we made banana ketchup.
Banana ketchup? So how does that even – what is that called today? Is that still just called banana ketchup?
Yeah, we just call it banana ketchup.
Okay.
Just
a mashed banana kind of thing?
It's mashed bananas. It's similar to regular ketchup.
Vinegar,
sweetness. We also colored it red just to make it resemble tomato ketchup.
But
yeah, right. But, yeah, it was kind of like a desperate need for ketchup, so they made banana ketchup.
Huh, interesting. And, Philippines has been kind of a crossroads for different cultures to kind of come in.
Cuisine
reflects that, yeah.
Yeah, just because of just where it's located as far as merchants and commerce.
Yeah.
It's a great place for a lot of countries to kind
of I want to taste this. And you mentioned that I'm grabbing this bowl, which looks fantastic. Number one, the presentation's beautiful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's
What's that?
Yeah, it's just it's
awesome.
It's what it is.
It looks amazing to me. So you've got some green onions and some, as you mentioned, some garlic on here as well.
Yeah.
Some kind of roasted dried garlic. Is that?
That's actually garlic chips.
Garlic chips. Okay.
Yeah.
How do they make garlic chips? Bake them or?
They dry it in the sun.
Oh, okay.
And then they fry it.
Oh, okay.
Or if you just want to do it really easy, just fry it.
Right.
It does have a little – it tends to be a little bit stickier if you do it that way, but
yeah.
They usually dry it and fry it.
And then it's topped with I'm guessing it's a soft-boiled egg?
Soft-boiled egg, right? Some chicken, and there's lime in there.
Nice.
And then you might want to stir it up a little bit because I topped it off with a little bit of the fish sauce and chili oil.
Okay. I'll do – oh, okay. Thank you for the warning on the chili oil. I'm going to break the egg, of course. Get that in there as well. Oh, man, this is looking good. So tell me more about the rice. You said the rice is kind of broken down. Is that done beforehand?
So, this is a super simple and easy dish to make because everything, it's like this is the kind of food that you
it's so good.
You eat like
– That's better. It's better than locust.
Yeah?
I'll tell you that right now.
Well, that's
good
to know.
This is a vast improvement over the last course.
Yeah, like cold days or when you're feeling under the weather, this is like the go-to food that we like to eat. It's super easy to make and relatively cheap because of it's mostly rice.
You're right. You know, the rice is so and the mushy is not quite right. It's got an oat.
Yeah.
Kind of almost character to it, like chewiness.
Yeah, like almost oatmeal, but not so mushy.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, it's super easy to make. You kind of just throw everything.
I'm just going to eat this whole bowl.
No problem. Go for it. Yeah, throw everything in a bowl and just kind of let it go until it's the right consistency for you. A lot of everyone kind of makes it their own way, a little bit thicker, a little bit runnier, more rice, less rice.
Who taught you how to make this?
It's kind of a combination of all my experiences with all my relatives.
Uh-huh.
And so mostly my mom and my grandfather. But yeah, a lot of the food influences that I've had has come from my family.
It's fun. I like to think about, I mean, even me as just a regular old cook, not a cook, just mm-hmm. a person that cooks my own food.
Yeah.
But when I make oatmeal, I think of my granddad because he made me oatmeal.
Yeah.
And I think about that. It's such a connecting process.
Yeah, just seeing it, smelling it, tasting it, it kind of brings you back into your memories. It's also a great way to bond with people. A lot of my memories are of being around family, eating food, cooking food. It's a good way to bond with people and making memories.
As you now have grown into a chef that has to teach others how to do things, what are some of the things you keep in mind when you're trying to teach people how to cook, when you've got new people in the kitchen that you're trying to show them the ways? What are some of the kind of things that you keep in mind as a...
It's less about the ingredients and kind of just understanding through experience. You just keep doing it and doing it. You'll notice characteristics of how the food reacts to water and to the humidity, to temperature and all that stuff. And just kind of you get a feel of it.
Mm-hmm.
It changes. Everything changes.
Just kind of repetition.
Repetition. You kind of notice like certain characteristics and how to adjust to it.
Yeah. Do you think there are people who are born bad cooks?
Yes. There are.
I don't know if that's the right answer. But you know people who are like, they're never going to get it.
Yeah, there's like, I can't help you, but I'll try.
Well, I like, that's good. That's an honest answer. Well, Rachel Brill, thank you so much for coming in, sharing this. I'm going to eat the rest of this bowl.
Go for it.
This is this delicious arroz caldo.
Yes.
And that's also just called Filipino-style rice. It's kind of a porridge, rice porridge.
Yeah, it's a rice porridge.
Yeah, so
savory.
It's a... Amazing. This whole recipe for this is online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. So check that out. And Rachel, thanks so much for coming in and sharing this delicious food with us and telling us a little bit about how you got into it. And
yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Your daily work. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. That's Rachel Brill. You can catch her nightly at in Boca al Lupo.
We are actually going to be opening up for lunch soon.
Oh,
yes.
Night and days.
Yeah.
That's great news.
We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, right. Well, to a degree, sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much. That's it for Juno Afternoon for today. Support comes from Hanson and Gress and listeners like you.